everyone. Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. This week, I have another awesome conversation for you with the host of the podcast, The Terrifying Tomes of Terror, Chance Forshee. Helming from Kentucky, he told me how he got into horror movies and horror books, why he started his podcast, and who his favorite horror writers are. He also tells me about the unexplained, mysterious phone call he got after seeing The Ring in theaters, and why he had such a good time seeing Freddy vs. Jason in theaters back in the day. One last thing before we get into this episode, if you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you so much to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated as it really helps people to find us. I think I've rambled enough, so let's get into this episode with Chance Forshee. Hey, Chance, how are you?
Hey, I am doing well. Thank you for asking. How is everything going on over in your neck of the woods?
It is just fine. Like we were just saying, we are getting some rain right now here in New York City. So I'm glad to be inside.
Yeah, New York City. Well, I am down here in Kentucky land. And down in Kentucky, we had a couple of days of decent weather, and we are back up into the heat waves. So I have fiddled with many dials on my microphone to make it where you cannot hear the air conditioner behind me.
Awesome. So thank you for being here. Do you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself to start?
Sure. Yeah. So I am Chance Forshee. A lot of people will know me as the curator of horror. That's my handle on Twitter. I work at a Barnes & Noble, but I also go out of my way to carry independent and marginalized voices in my store. People who have never been in a bookstore or in a Barnes & Noble have landed themselves into my store thanks to me just reaching out and finding people to put in there. So I like doing that. I also have my own podcast, The Terrifying Tomes of Terror, which you can find anywhere and everywhere. It's all over the place. Where I talk to horror authors about their books and everything else. But yeah, I'm just a huge horror fan, have been my whole life. And here now, as I edge up on 40, I have finally realized that the thing I'm supposed to be doing is selling horror books to people, which, yeah, hey, it's a good problem.
Yeah, awesome. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, I mean, that's a big question, right? Like, if I have to go for like my all-time favorite horror movie, and this may give me some backlash, I'm probably going to say Cabin in the Woods.
That's a solid pick. I don't know why you'd get backlash for that.
Well, I just, because it's more modern, you know, yeah. It doesn't have the pedigree of some of the others, but Cabin in the Woods, in my opinion, is one of those perfect films in that it picks at the tropes that created the horror genre while being a film that follows all of those same tropes. It's impressive how they put that together. Yeah, I love me some Cabin in the Woods, but that just digs some comedy horror in general. But Cabin in the Woods, I feel like, had that right balance of genuine terror and then also quasi-slapstick comedy.
Yes, I do remember seeing that in theaters, and then I watched it again for the first time at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, because I did not get at all what they were trying to do with the movie when I saw it when I was like 16, 17, so right. I was trying to watch it from a new perspective. So
it's an impressive feat, especially that it lived underwater for so many years before they released it, you know?
Oh, really?
They shot that film years before it actually came out.
Oh, wow.
They shot it like 2 or 3 years before Hemsworth was Thor. Mm. And then after he was Thor, they were like, oh, hey, that guy just did a big Marvel movie. We can release this horror movie now and advertise him as the lead. And it's like, yeah, but he also bites it through a force field halfway through the movie.
Oh, awesome. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
Oh, I mean, I'm definitely a lifelong fan. The first real experience I can remember having with horror was being, and I'm talking young, like 4 to 5 years old, and someone was watching The Fly on VHS or Betamax. I mean, it was that era. I don't know. It could have been either. Because I mean, we're talking like 1989, 1990. So someone was watching The Fly and had left me unattended, and I was also watching The Fly. And yeah, like Brundlefly, the body horror transformation, the Cronenberg of it all, that just clicked. And I mean, I remember being devastated watching The Fly 2 because my mom was pregnant at the time, and I was just certain that she was going to die when she gave birth to my younger sister. Which actually, my younger sister just had her third kid yesterday. So,
congrats.
So obviously, that didn't happen. Yes. But yeah, that's really. I walked into a room where someone was watching The Fly, and I was way too young for it. And it really just set the tone. But I mean, I remember reading The Shining, the book, around the time that The Shining TV show was happening on ABC. So that would have been 96, 97.
So you're like 10?
Yeah, exactly. I was like 10 years old, 11 years old, reading The Shining. I remember reading Frankenstein before that. So I was always a spooky kid.
Those are the best kinds of kids. So. Mm.
Yeah, until they start like talking to you. I've been watching all of Mike Flanagan stuff again the last few days because I'm interviewing Jamie Flanagan next week. And rewatching Bly Manor and Hill House, I'm just like, kids are fucking creepy, man. Like,
they're the worst.
I am glad I don't have any. I couldn't deal with like walk into a room and my kid like looking past me as I ask them something. No, that's not cool.
I can't believe you're putting yourself through watching the house on Haunted Hill again, or The Haunting of Hill House. That was rough.
Yeah, the bent neck lady. Going back through that again, it's tough. It's really tough, like knowing it, you know, and going back from the beginning and knowing that's Nell's story. My wife had never seen it somehow. So yesterday, my wife and I watched the entirety of Hill House.
Oh my goodness. And you're still standing.
I'm still standing. And I had watched the entirety of Bly like the day before.
Oh God.
And then we on Easter. Yeah. Easter this year. We watched all of Midnight Mass.
Oh my goodness. Somebody needs to throw you a parade for surviving that. True American hero right here. Is your wife a horror fan?
Yeah, she's a horror like film and television fan. I cannot get her to read a horror book.
Sounds like me. So
yeah. Which with my whole shtick is kind of a not a negative. I mean, she can like whatever she wants to like, but yeah, it definitely is like, but like what I do is horror books. that's all I talk about. That's all I read. Like I want to talk about them with people, but I am grateful that she likes horror films and television because my other main passion is wrestling and I cannot get her to like wrestling. So
I definitely empathize with her on that. So, yeah. So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
I think it's an escapism. I think that horror, at least in my perspective, horror is something that lives outside the mainstream. So a lot of people don't tend to even look at it or think about it. But the real world is so much worse than what any horror movie is going to give to us. So I think a lot of people like to be able to turn their brain off and look at these weird alternate versions of the world in horror and not have to think about the real life horror that's actually occurring around us. At least in terms for me, like that's how I feel. Like I'd much rather read a dozen terrifying novellas of different descriptions than read the news for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. The news is a pretty bleak place to be nowadays.
Yeah.
What's your favorite subgenre in horror?
Ooh, that's a good question. Are we talking? Yeah. Okay. I mean, films or books, I don't guess it really matters.
Films. Let's say films.
Films. Okay. So favorite subgenre in horror films. I would probably have to go with found footage.
Nice. What are your favorite found footage movies?
I mean, Rec is definitely going to be up there. Best and VHS 1984, 100% are in there. While the first Cloverfield was a little wonky, I thought the follow-up sequel, the Cloverfield, and I'm blanking on the name of it.
10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes, that's the one.
But it wasn't found footage.
I know it wasn't found footage, but it still felt like it was. You know what I mean? It had that vibe. It had that genre of all it would have taken was a little shaky cam. It had that feel. But yeah, those are definitely up there. Blair Witch Project obviously set the tone for the found footage renaissance, which my mother's maiden name is Blair.
Oh.
And I grew up on a farm that had like 100 acres of woodland.
Oh, God, that's terrifying.
Yeah. So we saw Blair Witch Project. And then after my mom went to bed, I went outside and I got twigs and I made the little sigil and I made the pile of rocks. And I hung it in front of her door. And the next day it was gone and we never talked about it, but she was mad.
I remember going to see the Blair Witch Project in theaters when it first came out when I was 13. And I wanted it to be so scary. And I remember not being scared of it at all. And the adult who took my best friend and I, she was freaked out. She like screamed when her husband snuck up behind her the next day. So,
For me, something like The Ring was way scarier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, definitely.
The Ring messed me up. Like, and I will openly admit, like, because I also had some dipshits that, and it was weird. Okay, so the girlfriend that I had at the time, Johanna, we went and saw The Ring, but it was a last minute thing. And this is, you know, I mean, The Ring came out, what, 2002? So this is pre, like, everyone having a cell phone kind of era. So, and I was still in high school. And so we went and saw the movie, and then Johanna dropped me off at home. And she was going to call me when she got home, but she lived about 15 minutes away. So she dropped me off at home. I went back to my mom's room to be like, hey, I'm home, whatever. And the phone rang way too fast to have been Johanna.
Yeah.
So I picked up the phone and all I heard was 7 days. And I freaked out. I freaked out because the phone said 7 days. And I was like, no, because I don't know who saw me. And to this day, I still have no idea who made that phone call.
Oh, my goodness. That's so creepy. That's amazing.
Yeah. No one ever came forward. And then I had like the weird stuff, you know, like I had a random nosebleed like 3 days later, which, you know, but it was like things were dry. It was totally normal to get a nosebleed. But yeah, I had a nosebleed. the teacher went on to put on the movie for the class and it was just static and it was all within like the week of me watching The Ring and I was just like, I'm gonna die. This is how I die.
Oh, wow. Yeah, The Ring is like my number one favorite horror movie. So I love it. And it's only PG-13. I always bring that up. Yeah, amazing.
Wild how it's PG-13.
I know. It's so good. It's so good. So do you have any favorite horror directors?
I mean, other than Mike Flanagan, who I will espouse from here to the end of time beyond his television series, but also, I mean, Oculus, Gerald's Game, Dr. Sleep. I mean, that's an unenviable task, right?
Yeah.
Like doing Dr. Sleep, you have to make a sequel to the book and the film. Like that's a tall order, and all the credit in the world for him pulling that off. Beyond him, I mean, Sam Raimi, obviously. Evil Dead was a big, big thing for me growing up and in determining my style of horror that I like, where I like it a little campy and a little scary. So I definitely think Sam Raimi was a big part of that. I mean, there's going to be a basic, but it's Carpenter. And also because like where I live, Bowling Green, Kentucky, Carpenter used to live here. We're Haddonfield, Illinois is based off of Bowling Green.
Oh, cool.
So we're like, I get that classic horror pedigree.
Yes. Well, there's a reason he's a legend. So,
right. So yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate. Maybe Edgar Wright in there more for like Shaun of the Dead, but you know.
So, like you said, you host a podcast called The Terrifying Tombs of Terror. Yes. Tell me what it's about and how you came up with the idea for it.
So yeah, Terrifying Tombs of Terror kind of just kind of sprang up. It's weird. Yeah, I mean, ideas just happen that way sometimes. So the fresh year started, 2022. I've been doing Twitch streaming for a while as a form of content creation. And I got promoted at my job. I work as a lead bookseller at a Barnes & Noble. I'm in charge of the horror section, the mystery and thriller section, and the true crime section, as well as all like new books, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So all of that's in my purview. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I want to do something that I'm passionate about in terms of content creation. So I want to do something that involves horror. I want to do something that involves books. I want to do something that involves horror books. And so my original idea was actually kind of like a booktuber, book talker kind of thing, right? Where I just, you know, grab a random book, you know, we need to do something. And I do a bit about it. And that was my original thought. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to message some authors and see if they're down. And no one has said no. So now that's turned into a publisher's messaging me and setting up interviews for their own books that are coming out. And I mean, what I'm recording in the next week and a half, I've got enough content to get me through August.
Wow.
Which is great. I like that. But holy shit. So yeah, essentially though, I talk to authors about their books. I have them kind of pitch the book. But really, you know, if we have an hour and a half episode, hour or 2 hour episode, 20% of that's talking about the book. The rest of it is just talking. Talking horror, talking, you know, this month, especially, we're recording this in June, queer culture, queer icons, queer representation, you know, just the things that we want to talk about. And then, you know, I loop it back to the book as I can, but I just like to have a really casual conversation. My editor described it as, you know, a couple people having beers, talking horror. And I love that description because that's absolutely the vibe I was going for.
That's super cool. What episodes do you have coming up that you can talk about?
Oh, geez. Yeah. So as of the day that we're recording this, Eric LaRocca's episode is live, where I talked to Eric about their upcoming novella, We Can Never Leave This Place. We recorded for 2+ hours. I cut it to 1 hour 45 minutes, and it was a cut that hurt my heart, but I saved all of that. That's stuff that I can save for a different day. But Eric's episode was very special. I would say Nat Edwards, TC Parker, her episode, which came out last week, is probably the most funny and most charming episode that I have put forth so far. Nat is hilarious, and I had so much fun talking to her. Tomorrow morning, I am interviewing Allie Wilkes.
Oh, yeah. I've had her on.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, wait, no. I'm thinking of Allie Malenenko. Never mind.
Yes, that's a different Allie, but I am planning on having her on later this year. But no, I'm talking about Allie, All the White Spaces, Allie, yes. Which, get my finger. I feel like a weatherman. There it is. All the White Spaces, which is an Arctic horror novel set at the end of World War I with a trans protagonist. It is a lovely horror book. So I'm talking to her tomorrow morning. I've got Tanya Ransom. Oh, I've got so many coming up. The ones I'm really excited about are Nat Cassidy as Mary, An Awakening of Terror, that's coming out. But I'll have him on. Brian McCauley in October.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Oh, I love Brian so much. But his Curse of the Reaper is such a perfect Hollywood horror book. I absolutely adored it. He'll be on in October for that. Clay McLeod Chapman is coming on again, which will be his third time on the podcast. But he's going to come on for September to promote Ghost Eaters, which is the best horror book I have read. You know what? Let me rephrase. I mean, the best horror book. The best book I have read in like 2 years.
That's high praise.
I mean, and I will stand by it. It's an absolutely stunning piece of fiction.
Nice. Very cool. Have you read the book, The Last House on Needless Street?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, you did. You liked it?
I loved it. Yeah. Yes, okay. I loved it. Catriona Ward blew my brain away with that book. I remember talking to my wife as I was getting to different points in it and being like, this book has a cat protagonist. And she's like, what? And I'm like, the cat's a protagonist. We get cat point of view. And she's like, what are you reading? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm reading.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely adored that book. I have not read Sundial yet, but it is on the TBR and I hope to get to it very, very soon.
Very cool. I had heard that there was like a twist in The Last House on Needless Street. So the entire time I was reading it, I was trying to figure out what the twist is. I was a little bit kind of right, but I think reading that book sort of broke my brain.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I didn't know any, I went into it blind, right? I had no idea other than I had seen the cover and I was like, oh, that's a spooky cover. I'll read that. And I was blown away. Like that book, so good. And I've recommended it to so many people. And it's been about half and half of people that come back and they're like, that was great. And people that are come back and they're like, what the fuck did you tell me to read? Which for a book like that, I feel like it's pretty fair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you held up a copy of We Need to Do Something. Is that the book that the movie that was on Hulu is based on?
Yes. Yes. Max Booth wrote the novella We Need to Do Something. He was also on set when they were actually making the film. I recorded my interview with Max for his book Maggots Screaming, which is somewhere around here. I've got like piles of books next to me from where I filmed my podcast. Yeah, Maggots Screaming, which is a really fun, like not quite zombie read, but in that kind of vein, but very humorous, very cartoony. But yeah, Max wrote that, and then the film came from there.
Yeah. What did you think of the film?
I really liked it, which I watched the film before I read the novel, like read the novella, and before I knew who Max was. Just one of those things, I was looking for something to watch, and hey, here's a new horror movie on Hulu. And so I watched it, and I was like, okay, I don't know what I was expecting. Wasn't what I got, whatever it was. But I like that. I know a lot of people were mad about the ending, and Max even makes fun of that in Maggots Screaming, where characters talk about the movie, but like, that ending sucked. Oh, it just ended out of nowhere.
Oh.
But I liked that. I thought that was a clever thing to do, because Stephen King does the same thing, where he talks about, you know, the film adaptations of his books and his movie, or in his books. So
that's cool. Who would you say are your favorite horror authors?
Oh, Clay McLeod Chapman is going to be my number one right now. Just because, like I said, Ghost Eaters comes out in September. And it's the best thing I've read in years. Clay really tapped into something special in that one, I feel. But also his books, The Remaking and Whisper Down the Lane, are also just spectacular horror reads. Beyond Clay, I mean, Stephen Graham Jones. There has not been a single thing that I've read from Stephen that I haven't been a huge fan of. But I've already had the opportunity to read Don't Fear the Reaper, which doesn't come out until February. I got the advanced reader copy of that, and it's just as good as My Heart is a Chainsaw. So if you're a slasher fan, there's just one more love letter to that genre waiting for you in February. Beyond that, I mean, at least as far as currently writing, Grady Hendrix. Grady's next book, How to Sell a Haunted House, that also got pushed the next year. But his book, Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires, was my favorite book of 2020.
Nice.
Screenwriters, I would definitely throw Jamie Flanagan up in there. Jamie has worked for, you know, worked with his brother Mike on Bly Manor and Midnight Mass and Midnight Club and Fall of the House of Usher. he's worked with his brother on some incredible stuff. They won the Bram Stoker Award.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they won the Bram Stoker Award for episode 6 of Midnight Mass.
Oh, wow. Is that the one? No, I'm thinking of Bly Manor, where they keep going back, like rewinding and doing the same scene over and over.
Yeah, no, that's Bly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which, oh, whoa, fantastic. I just rewatched, like I said, I'm recording an episode with Jamie and Becca Klingel next week. So I went back because my wife and I had just rewatched Midnight Mass. So now I rewatched Bly, and now I rewatched Chill House. So I'm kind of mentally back in that state to be able to talk to them about the decisions they made. But holy shit. I also don't recommend watching all of those in a very recent phenomenon.
So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was the case?
I think it goes back to the escapism. I think it goes back to we've read The Stand, you know, or we've seen The Stand. We've seen 28 Days Later. We've seen all of these viral contagion horror films and books. And so when they're like, stay inside, we're like, yeah, probably. That's probably a good idea. I think if we go outside, it's probably going to get bad. But then everyone stayed inside and they wrote really fucked up horror stuff because they were locked in their own homes, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
and gave me more than a few ideas my own self. But yeah, I think horror fans did better in quarantine because we see what getting out of quarantine will do to somebody.
That's a really good answer. So do you write any horror yourself?
Yes. Okay. Yes. With a big old asterisk. So I have nothing that's published. I've got a horror Western that I've been working off and on for a year or so. And recently I not shelved, but I just kind of set it aside because it had gotten to the point, you know, 20,000 words, bleak, just bleak, just dark. And to get into the headspace to work on that project was not something I had the spoons to give, you know what I mean? So yeah. I've had to kind of, let's move you over here.
Yeah.
But I had a fantastic idea about a ska band fighting vampires. And that's definitely been a much more productive project for me. Oh yeah, I am deep into outlining mode, about to actually get into first draft mode on the ska horror book. So yeah, I working on writing my own horror. Yeah, the ska band, they fight vampires in a rundown Chinese restaurant. But yeah, it's just a much more exciting thing to write than a bleak Mormon Lovecraftian Western, which I was writing, which still I want to finish and I have many ideas for, but I have just been in the headspace for it. So this one is just a lot more fun. It's silly. It's more Scooby-Doo. So it's just a lot more, I don't know, fantastical, zany. But yeah, it's like, it's R-rated Scooby-Doo, but it's ska. And they're fighting monsters. Like, I just feel like that's a lot of fun.
Nice. I'm just imagining the offspring fighting monsters.
The comp I used was like Green Room meets Idle Hands by way of From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, okay, cool. That's definitely a vibe.
Oh, for sure a vibe, yeah. So, you know, something I'm playing around with, and we'll see what happens with it. But
awesome. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So we're actually recording this tonight on the summer solstice on June 21st.
Yes.
What are your feelings on Midsommar? You're going to watch it? I'm going to go watch it after we're done here. So.
Oh, damn. I hadn't even thought about rewatching it until you brought that up. I dig that movie. I mean, I probably like, I don't know. I go back and forth. I don't know which one I like better.
Between Midsommar and Hereditary?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very different. So
they're very different. I probably like Hereditary better. Yeah. It's more my vibe. Mm-hmm. But Midsommar was good, man. Yeah. That's good horror. Especially with them doing it like out in the open and in the sunlight. You know, yeah. There's very few horror films that show you the horror in the daylight.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can definitely appreciate that. It's kind of like Psycho Goreman is mostly in the daytime. And I can appreciate that about it. Like, it's something about being able to show off your practical effects in natural light that I think is very appealing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I dig Midsommar. I hadn't thought about rewatching it, but damn, I might have to.
I was watching a YouTube review about the movie Watcher that just came out recently, and she remarked how a lot of it does take place in the daylight. So that was interesting that you bring that up too.
Yeah. I mean, one of my best friends brought up when I was kind of pitching him my ska project, like Sunset Overdrive, the Xbox One game. Okay. Where it's all during daytime. It's very bright. It's very colorful. But you're also popping heads and, you know, doing gruesome kills. But it's set to a much more positive, like, SoCal atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like it's a good vibe.
You mentioned that you live in Kentucky. Have you ever been to any haunted places in Kentucky?
So, yes, I will say. So, obviously, one of the most famous haunted places in Kentucky is going to be Waverly Hills Sanitarium up in Louisville, which is where it used to be a TB hospital. And so it's become one of the most haunted places in America kind of joints. I went there. It was spooky just because of what it is, but I didn't see anything.
Are you a skeptic?
Yeah, I'm a skeptic. But that hasn't, that being said, I have seen things.
What have you seen?
Okay, so when I was a kid, I went to a place called Camp Curry, which was a summer camp for kids, very wet, hot American summer, where we, you know, they just packed us all up in a bunch of buses and shipped us off this joint for 2 weeks, whatever it was, where we all stayed in cabins. And so, like, you know, you walk into a cabin, and it's like, bunk beds, 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 the whole way around, right? And it's pretty wide deal. Mm-hmm. And I was on the top bunk, and they wanted this whole thing where they wanted us to make our beds. So I was just sleeping in my sleeping bag, right? But it was hot, so I had my sleeping bag completely unzipped to, like, be a blanket. Mm-hmm. And I wake up in the middle of the night, and my sleeping bag has fallen off the bed. So, and I'm on the top bunk, so it's all the way down there. So I roll over and I look, and there's a kid, and I'm like, here's my bed, and then there's one more bed, and it's the corner. So it's like corner bed, middle bed. So this middle bed is, I look down on the bottom bunk, this kid's sitting there. Just sitting, staring straight forward. And, you know, I don't know what time it is, but it's late. And I'm like, hey, can you pass me my sleeping bag? It fell off the bunk. And he turns and just looks at me. Doesn't say anything, doesn't move, just turns and looks. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So I slide off the bunk, grab the sleeping bag, throw it back up top, climb back up, and then look over to, like, tell the kid, like, fuck you, thanks for your help. Gone. No one there. Not a soul. And then I brought it up the next day at, like, two other campers, like, who sleeps there? And they're like, no one sleeps there. It's like, there was a kid there. So, yeah, I've got that one. And then, I mean, I went to prom in a cave, so I heard things down there, but I don't necessarily know that, like, it's haunted or just it's a cave, man, and things sound weird down in a cave. But I did have a scary sleep paralysis incident that I am not 100% is not supernatural.
Oh, I hear that. That's terrifying. My boyfriend has those, and I wake him up from them every now and then. So,
which is also very, very Hill House.
Yes.
Not cool.
Oh, God. How do you decide what horror movie to watch when you're just hanging out and looking for something to watch?
You know, with that, it's really just a mood situation for me. Sometimes I'll rewatch something I've seen 100 times. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I'll see the synopsis for something. And I'm like, that sounds stupid as fuck. I have to watch it. Like, that's how I watched Velocipaster.
Oh, God.
Like, I was scrolling and I'm like, wait, what?
This exists?
What does this say? Yes, I will be watching this. And then I watched it and I was like, that was absolutely terrible. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. Because, like, I mean, I dig on some absolutely terrible horror. So, yeah, it kind of depends. Like, I watched Mad God this morning.
I've heard a lot of people talking about that.
Yeah, I watched that this morning. Just based on what I'd seen people talking on Twitter, I don't really have much of an opinion on it. Not that it's not good or bad. It's just, I don't think I'm intelligent enough to tell you what the plot was.
Like, okay.
If there was one, I assume there was one. Mm-hmm. I'm just not avant-garde enough to be able to explain it. But it did remind me a lot of the Little Nightmares games.
Mm, okay. Not familiar with them.
Yeah. So Little Nightmares, where you play it, they almost have like a stop motion-y kind of look to them. But you play as this tiny little person, and it's like a platformer. So you play as this tiny little person, and there's giant monsters trying to stop you the whole way. And they do terrifying things, and they can stretch the limbs and whatever else. So this reminded me of that, but there's no dialogue in this movie. Just like babies crying is the majority of it, which is creepy in and of itself.
Yeah. Well, if you like movies with no dialogue, have you seen Willy's Wonderland?
Oh yeah. With Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did dig that, but I'm also a sucker for Nick Cage. So.
I mean, who isn't?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Color Out of Space.
I haven't seen that. It's been on my watch list for forever.
You should watch it. In my opinion, it is the best Lovecraft adaptation that has ever been made.
Okay. Good to know.
And I'm a big Lovecraft fan. So okay. I absolutely adored it. But also I loved Mandy.
That's on my watch list too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nick Cage at this point in his career is just like, I'm doing whatever I want. Yeah.
And he made a movie where he was playing himself. So he just, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Dracula 3000.
How come?
It's the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. It's absolutely terrible. There is no redeeming quality about it. It's not even one of those, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
It is just a genuinely terrible film. And it had like Erica Olaniak and Coolio. Like somehow, I mean, because we're talking, you know, early 2000s. And the cover art was gorgeous. The cover art was like H.R. Giger inspired. And the tagline was, in space, there is no daylight. And you're like, oh, okay. That's a pretty clever idea for a vampire. And I swear to God, the vampire that they used was in a Bela Lugosi costume. Like, I'm talking red ribbon with the amulets and the blur. Like, I want to talk your blood. Like, they went as campy as they could get with him. But it's meant to be the future. And then the movie just ends. Like, the ship blows up and everything's done. And I swear to this day that the producers showed up on set and they were like, absolutely not, end it now. Like, we're not paying another dime for this. End it right now. It's like, well, we still have this many pages of script, and it's like, blow up the ship. And so the ship just blows up and the movie ends. And there's no resolution to anything. There's no, it is the worst movie.
Okay. Good to know. I will.
I recommend you watch it if you want to see the worst thing that's ever been made is. The Room deserves an Oscar compared to that.
Nice. A movie that has no ending is the, what was it, 2019 or early 2020s, The Turning. It had no ending. Like, it ended, and me and everyone else in the theater were like, huh, what? We're like, wait, that's it? Okay. All right, we'll leave. We'll leave now. So, I wouldn't recommend it. It's not a very good movie. It's like sort of creepy, but like it shits the bed at the end.
Oh yeah. I mean, the only reason I would ever recommend Dracula 3000 is to like a film student in terms of don't ever do this.
Yeah.
Beyond that, no, it should never be viewed by human eyes. It's cursed.
Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Yeah. Okay. So my very favorite horror movie in a theater experience is Freddy versus Jason.
Okay, what happened?
I saw it at the Plaza, which in my town was like the ghetto shitty theater, which only showed like the horror movies and shit that the respectable theaters would not show. And so we went there to see Freddy versus Jason, and the credits were barely over before you could see the cherries of like a dozen joints burning in the crowd.
Oh, wow.
And so the entire crowd got baked and watched this movie live. And yeah, that was a great experience. It was a ton of fun. Like Kelly Rowland, when she finally got killed, you know, they're in the third act, like the crowd cheered. Like they hated her so much.
I did actually see that in theaters. I don't know why, because I had never seen a Friday the 13th or a Nightmare on Elm Street movie before. I did not know the history between these two entities. I've never gone back to rewatch it, but
I mean, it's, I love it because, I mean, I went into it with the full history, right? So I had seen everything. But even without that, I feel like it's a perfect little time capsule of that era, that early 2000s, like, nu metal era. You know, you got Catherine Isabel in it. And yeah, I don't know. It was good.
Yeah. What has been your favorite horror movie that you've watched so far in 2022?
Oh, shit. That's a good question. 2022. I don't think it came out this year, but I watched it this year. Antlers.
Yes. That came out last year, but yeah. No, I really like
it. But Antlers. Yeah, it came out. It was on streaming this year, so that's where I caught it. That's a damn good horror flick, man. Carrie Russell is so good at it. She's good at everything. But yeah, Antlers. I love a good like folk horror, Wendigo-esque kind of thing. Yep. Part of the reason why Stephen Graham Jones, The Only Good Indians, is such a big book for me. Because it's not a Wendigo, but it's that same...
Yeah.
Same fee.
Cool. Yeah, no, I really liked that movie when I saw it last year. Because I really... There was a lot of atmosphere. So...
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm trying to think of what's come out this year. I guess this year, I would say Scream. I really dug Scream. Also because James and Chelsea were in it from Dead Meat. Doing parodies of their own selves, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
But Jenna Ortega, she's killing it.
Oh my God. She is just in everything and she's so good.
Like she's in the new Addams Family Wednesday show that Tim Burton's doing. And I have zero interest in watching that, but I will watch that because of her.
Yeah. What horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of 2022?
As much as I hate to admit it, it's probably Halloween.
Halloween Ends?
Yeah. I hated the last one.
Oh, so did I. I was so mad when I walked out of the movie theater.
I was really mad at the end of it. But at this point, it's like I've watched two of them. Like, I gotta watch the damned ending.
Yeah.
So I guess give me the ending so I can be mad about all of it. But I'm hoping it's going to do me like Star Trek, right? So like the new Star Trek movies. The first one I was like, meh, that was all right. And the second one I was like angry at. And then the third one I was like, actually, that was actually what Star Trek is supposed to be. So I'm hoping that Halloween follows the same formula.
I'm going in with very lowered expectations, but you got to just hope for the best.
Because that end, like, okay. And you can cut this or do whatever you want with
it.
But
this movie deserves to be spoiled because it's hot garbage.
But they spend so much time in the first one and the first half of the second one being like, he's just a man. He's just a man. And he wears a mask. And then just out of nowhere, they're like, he's not a man. He's supernatural. We can never stop him. And so now he's going to one-shot himself through all these villains. And it's like, what? That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
If I ever hear the expression evil dies tonight again, I'll kill myself.
Dead Meat's doing their review or their kill count of that this Friday. And I fully expect Evil Dies Tonight to be way overused in it.
Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like, or do you have any unpopular horror movie opinions?
Oh, I mean, I imagine so. I like a lot of really dumb stuff. Like, I like all the Leprechaun movies. Like, I like dumb horror. So, you know, I always dig on something like, you know, Piranha, or I don't know. I mean, two of my very favorite horror films ever, Cabin in the Woods and Tucker and Dale versus Evil, just because of how they play with the tropes and play with the horror and the comedy aspect of it. So I don't know. What was the third Devil's Rejects movie called? Three from Hell. That's what it was. I know a lot of people did not like that, but I dug it. And it definitely felt like a Rob Zombie comic book.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
Ooh, man. You know what? I'm going to do a solid for my friend Clay McLeod Chapman and say that I would do a remake of Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
I've never seen it, but I really want to.
It is a solid, like, 70s era horror flick. But he based a lot of what happens in the remaking his horror book off of the events of that movie. So I watched it under his recommendation and I really dug it. So yeah, to pay some homage to the guy that got my podcast started, I would do a remake of Let's Scare Jessica to Death, which fits right into the book. So I'm surely cursed.
That's cool. I have a friend who lives in Connecticut and she lives right down the street from the house.
Movie.
Yeah. And it has a plaque up there and everything. So
nice.
Yeah. So my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question. I had to spend quarantine with a horror villain. I don't know. I guess I would want someone who's like, would do their chores. You know what I mean? Like, if you're stuck in quarantine, you want to be doing that all by yourself. I'm probably going to go with like Norman Bates. He ran a hotel. You know, if he needed mother like in a room by herself, you know, that's fine. But he ran a hotel, so he knew how to replace, you know, sheets and towels and stuff. So he probably knows how to run it. I could teach him how to run a dishwasher.
That's a great answer. Well, thank you so much for being here. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you and your podcast on the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the curator of Horror Transforshi. You can find me on Twitter at curator of horror or at terrifying tomes. I'm on YouTube as Terrifying Tomes of Terror. You can find the podcast anywhere and everywhere that podcasts are found. Yeah, I'm pretty much everywhere.
All right. Well, awesome. Thank you. Thank you again. And I will see you around on Twitter soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Chance Forshi, and thanks again to Chance for coming on. I'll leave links to his socials and his podcast in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod, or on Instagram at Who's There Podcast, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and get vaccinated.